Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
I hate energy drink millionaires that decide as a pet project to hire once vaulted and esteemed actors to act in their shitty-ass movie.
We are going to have to agree to disagree on that one.
No, we're not. If you don't agree with me by the end of this, that's the end of this fucking show. This will be the first time, indeed, John and Alex hate stuff. And that stuff being Sicilian Vampire.
Like spaghetti or a getty, pantaletti and linguine. Some capelli or an elli, vermicelli, farfalline. Rigatoni, macaroni, cannelloni, and stellini. Papadelli, a rotelli, tagliatelle, fettuccine.
This was amazing.
Oh, boy. Was it?
Yes. This is on the level of Neil Breen, Tommy Wiseau, of just awful, but like a singular vision. It's special and how terrible it is. Because this guy makes movies in 5 days.
Yeah, look, I know. I don't actually hate this movie. But the parts of the movie I hate makes me like, no, I guess I hate it. Like, because
I don't want to watch it ever
again.
That's
what I mean. Like, because I agree with you.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed it in its own way. But there were parts, I mean, we'll go through it. But if they took longer to tell jokes, all of my willpower was based around not just skipping forward a little bit during those scenes, because it is interminable.
Well, so let's give a little background here on Frank D'Angelo.
Oh, please do.
So Frank D'Angelo is a Canadian millionaire, thousandaire? I don't know.
He's a millionaire, yeah, according to what I've read.
He's an entrepreneur of some sorts, has had a storied career.
Well, now it's not true. He made his money off of Tiger something energy drink.
Cheetah.
And then, Cheetah.
Yeah, that's the ads would feature disgraced sprinter Ben Johnson.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Boy.
And Frank D'Angelo was in all his ads. He was also in all the ads for D'Angelo's Frozen Foods, which helped make his money along with Cheetah.
Yeah, and then he also had a Steelhead beer,
Steelback.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's much worse.
Right. So, yeah, so he has some sort of, I don't know, bottomless, but he has a whole lot of money. And it's very focused on him, what he thinks is funny, and it's painful in that regard of them making jokes.
Does he think it's funny? Like, okay, are those played for humor? Sorry, we'll get back to his background. But
a mouse farts.
That wasn't the part I was referencing. No,
okay, because
no.
That is the funniest part.
No, we'll get to that. I know, I get the humor, and please, audience, understand, I'm using the biggest air quotes you've ever fucking seen. I mean the parts where they're actually telling jokes.
Yeah.
Was that actually supposed to be funny?
I don't know. So basically, what happens is, though, he's made a bunch of these movies. I don't know how many in total.
I think it was 5 or 6 I read. One came out right after this, and I think another one just came out.
Yeah, he'll pay actors in cash money, and he'll shoot a movie in under 5 days. So you get people like James Caan, who apparently was in this one because he's going through a messy divorce. You have like Paul Sorvino, all these people that, honestly, if I'm them, yeah, like it's well catered, whatever, and you just go up to Canada for 5 days and you get cash money.
I read that it's well catered too. That was weird. That showed up in a lot of the descriptions.
Yeah. But I can see him being like that being a pointless expenditure that he's like, no, we gotta have the good guy Bagul or whatever the Canadian equivalent of saying that is.
Yeah. Robert Loggia's second to last film, his last being Independence Day Resurgence. That's up there with Orson Welles being Unicron in the Transformers movie.
Well, here's the difference is that Unicron is actually in the movie. Whereas Robert Loggia leaves a couple of voicemail messages and then shows up for 5 seconds.
He's like Bela Lugosi in Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Pretty much.
He just dies midway through.
Pretty much.
This is Robert Loggia walking by with a cape holding over his face. Oh boy, it was depressing to see how many people signed up for this.
There's an interesting subtext in this movie for being a movie ostensibly about a vampire.
Well, no, it's equal part Goodfellas and From Dusk Till Dawn. Equal parts Goodfellas and From Dusk Till Dawn.
Zero does equal zero.
Yes.
But in terms of like being a vampire and trying to live eternally, there's a subtext of horribly plastic surgeoned actors doing that. Like trying to retain their youth and looking awful, with the exception of Michael Paré, who looks pretty good.
Who was Michael Paré?
Michael Paré was like an 80s action star. City on Fire was a movie he was in. He's in a bunch of like B-movie stuff.
No, but
he was the bearded guy. And he looks a little, when he does have the beard, he looks a little bit more.
He's the one that told the joke about the jerking off into nuts.
Yes.
That guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked all right.
Yeah. Paul Sorvino.
That's the other guy in his friend
group? No, he's the big fat guy that eats at a strip club.
So Frank D'Angelo, yeah, he's this self-made millionaire, except apparently his parents had money, so he wasn't all that self-made. He's got the Frank talk show, mm-hmm. which he buys time on Canadian TV
yeah.
as a fake talk show. And the only commercial breaks are commercials for products that he owns.
Yes.
And well, that sounds amazing.
Well, and this movie is what they call it's four-walled, as in like that he's – some of these awful movies like still are Steven Seagal's and stuff like that sort of have this kind of like built-in market where it's like just coming under budget. We've already pre-sold the DVDs. It's fine. Where Frank D'Angelo is paying to get these in theaters and to be shown at film festivals and stuff like that, that are more interested in just getting money than care what's being shown.
So, but how does this make money is my question. I don't understand the.
I don't know. It generates buzz, and then idiots like us watch it on Amazon or.
Because this had a budget. Like, this actually looks pretty good, especially for a 5-day movie. This is probably the best looking. Well,
is claiming that this was shot on like 6K cameras, and it doesn't look like it's anything special.
No, but it's shot on nice cameras.
Yeah,
because there's some exterior, especially those establishing shots in the beginning, look really good.
Like, well, that's having just recently read The Disaster Artist, which was a fantastic book. I haven't seen the movie at all, but. I want behind the scenes from the people that actually work on it, because there is a certain amount of like, this is probably a pain in the butt because he also doesn't really write scripts. He kind of has a script that's very loose. And so I'm unsure of how that goes on in what that means for production in terms of, you know, do people know what they're walking into that day, or like, we're going to be shooting in the restaurant. Well, what scenes are we doing? I don't know. So, what that's like to work on that, and then are they getting paid cash? You know what I mean? Like, there's probably some incentive to deal with this nonsense.
Yeah, I suppose so. That's an interesting the acting performances in this are weird, because, and I think that's the answer, is that there's not that much of a script, because they're somewhere between like bottomlessly awful and actually kind of good in like an interest, like they're interesting, and it's like I found myself not hating them only because. I guess because they're improv. So it's this is weird. This is not the way I expect people to talk in a movie.
Well, you have these decent actors, like people that are fine decent actors, doing these kind of improv scenes. And as anyone that has listened to this show will tell you, improv is hard. And these guys do a decent enough job with it. Except Paul Sorvino, who just does not care. Like, he is just chewing up scenery when he can and just... it just doesn't want to be there at all, which is fine. But then you have like James Caan, for as stupid as his role is the best part of this movie. His weird doctor guy, just the way he delivers his lines is great, because he's a decent actor.
No, you're right. But that just, it was hard for me to enjoy that stuff. And I did enjoy his scenes to overcome how sad I felt.
Oh yeah.
To see James Caan in this movie. Maybe because like, oh boy, you have no money. Like your life is so rough right now. Like, you, because he's all stooped over. You can see like he's not feeling so good in his old age. Mm-hmm. It's
tough, because so much of my perception of James Caan as the person is based solely on that Simpsons episode that he's in, where Bart has like basically the casino or the Playboy Mansion in his treehouse.
James Caan's in that?
Yeah, and because James Caan hooks up with Edward Krabappel, right. And he's like, some guy's like a challenge, not me. But so I have this idea of James Caan, and like, there are some stories about him in the 70s and the Playboy Mansion and being a piece of shit. But then I watched the behind the scenes of, or like some documentary of the movie Thief that he's in, and he was very humble, and seemingly very humble. And you kind of like, oh, yeah, you're just a person, you're just an actor. But then like, he's gone through like four marriages and something, so I'm sure he's great. But so he needed money, so he's in this.
Yeah, and here's a fun fact, and rarely does the trivia on IMDb come up on the show, but this one needs to be read. According to McLean's magazine, Frank D'Angelo's name appears in the final credit a total of 145 times.
Yes.
This should be submitted to Guinness.
Yeah, so I counted. I saw that.
Oh, did you?
And I counted, and the thing is that those are primarily all music tracks. So this is something that I thought of, too. So... his name comes up like a fair amount of times in produced, written by, starring, whatever. But then when it comes to like music tracks used, that's where the bulk, like 90% of that name shows up, because he's like performs, writes, and produced by or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there's also a little bit of like robbing Peter to pay Paul in terms of like, well, I'm going to license my music tracks and then like I'm going to get the producers to pay for this and then I get that money.
It seems like
kind of a scam thing for the amount of like, you don't need, there are not that many music drops in the movie that you're aware of in the first place. Like there's, you hear that Gigolo song that he performs a lot. Yeah. There's like one like little sad kind of mysterious song that plays all the time. So it kind of seems like, well, look, you want one of my songs, you're getting all of my albums.
I think you're
That's
right.
a package deal.
Here's a shocking point of the movie, and we can swing back around, but this goes to Frank D'Angelo's character. So he starts to sing in the club in that one scene.
Yes.
And I put singing in quotes, and then he went, wait, no, he's singing?
Yeah.
It's like, this guy's got a really good voice. So I look up, and he's like, oh, he can actually sing.
Yeah.
That's weird to me. Like, he seems like this talentless, like, kind of hack guy that's got a lot of money, but apparently he's got, like, I mean, not like I would never listen to him on purpose, but, like, that's a very good singing voice. Like, he sings well, and that's so, like, that seems antithetical to the character I know of Frank D'Angelo.
Yeah,
like,
well,
it seems like he should have no talent, and yet he's got this beautiful voice. It's so weird.
What's interesting also is going back and watching those ads I was mentioning is that he, in this one ad I saw for D'Angelo's Frozen Foods, he plays every character, and it's like a mobster going into a restaurant to order lasagna, and the waiter doesn't know what to do about it, and he goes to the chef, and the chef's like, just use D'Angelo's food. And they're all different characters, but they're all played by Frank D'Angelo. And it's like just a big dumb commercial, but like he's interesting enough in it. And I was surprised because in this movie, he's such a bore. He's such an ass through most of it because he plays, I guess, a mob boss or some kind of capo.
I think he's supposed to be the boss.
And it's like he just watched The Sopranos and went, I like when the mob guys yell at each other.
Yeah.
Because that's all he does. He's like his friends that he's supposed to be like grown up with and be good friends with. All he does is just yell at them. And it's not like in a fun way where like, you know, Tony Soprano will like crap on someone, but then be like, hey, you come here. He's just a jerk to everybody.
I think, yeah, he's an ass. He's very unlikable, but I think they're trying to go for that. Like, I just busted your balls.
Yeah.
Like get over here.
Yeah.
I give you a here's a pin. But that doesn't come across that way. He comes across as like a jerk, and a lot of people in this movie are jerks.
Yes.
Like, they're kind of Weasley friend that they're like an asshole to.
Yeah.
It's not like a fun being an asshole. He's just like, they're treating him like an asshole, and then that turns out, hey, he's the snitch. Like, that's, I mean, it's not like it's telegraphed, but it's like, that's not surprising.
Yeah,
like,
he should be.
Yeah, like, they should have made Mira Sorvino. What's the other guy's name?
Paul Sorvino.
No, the other one. Armand Asante.
Armand Asante.
Armand Asante should have been the snitch.
Yeah.
He's like the one you wouldn't expect that they'd be like, oh, this is great. By the way, on that note, why the fuck is Eric Roberts in this movie?
So it's Eric Roberts and Art Hindle. Art Hindle is a Canadian actor, and he's most known here for he was in The Brood and the remake of The Body Snatchers, the Donald Sutherland version.
I've seen that. I don't
remember. He looks like a very tall Peter Dinklage in those movies. But he's like unrecognizable I found him unrecognizable in this movie until I found out later. Cause at one point, Frank D'Angelo and, Trafficante is his character.
Oh, what a bad last name.
Yeah. And his crew of buddies are going to a cabin to hang out and have a weekend away. And the FBI is, observing him is doing a stakeout by just parking the car right in front of the house.
Yeah.
And with their expert tech of Eric Roberts looking at the house, and it's Eric Roberts and this Art Hindle guy, and they just sit there, and then Eric Roberts gives some talk about, like, I hate how mobsters don't pay taxes, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just like, okay, we need names in this movie. Eric Roberts is in this. Eric Roberts is in it. Let's he's free this one day. Let's find something for him to do. Boom. He's surveilling, because it does not matter. For
no.
the rest of the movie, it does not matter.
Yeah, it did nothing. And then, so let's get to the... All right, so basically, the movie is established via him preparing to go on this trip into the woods with his three pals. Now, does he not say that it's a once-a-year thing in the beginning of the movie?
I believe so.
Because then later in the movie, they
it
say
does
once,
not matter.
It says once a month.
Yeah, it
okay,
does.
Because I found a
yeah.
lot of these
yeah.
as we're going. Okay, so he's getting prepared, and Daryl Hannah is wasted, because I mean, I guess she just, I mean, yeah, it's free money, so why
yeah.
not? But like, you were like just in two very successful Tarantino movies. Like not just, well, but just, like,
yeah,
within the past, you know, what's a decade, like mm-hmm. your name still carries enough weight that you shouldn't be in this.
Yeah. Free money. And like, yeah. but like, and her face is hidden the whole time. Like she, I don't know if it's her hair or a wig, but just, it's always covering her face. Like through the entire movie.
Yeah. She seemed kind of puffy. So I wonder if maybe she got sick or something. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what the choice was there, but it was like, well, Daryl Hannah's in this movie, but she'd rather you not know that it was Daryl Hannah.
Oh, and speaking of covering face, so our hero, Frank D'Angelo, which I'll call him that because fuck his real name. He's going through his morning, getting ready to go to the campground or whatever, the cabin. And he says goodbye to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And they purposefully don't show his daughter's face in that first scene because she's just asleep with the blanket over her face.
Uh-huh.
How is she not a stripper later at the other strip club, at the go-go bar, the black, yeah. I don't remember the name of the bar. I think I have it written down somewhere. But they it's so like telegraphed that way because they cut from that to the scene with Jeff Baldwin? I don't know.
Daniel Baldwin. She's not a stripper, though.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. But they cut from... They don't show a young person's face, only her hair. They cut to a go-go bar. Like, how... That's... They're setting up, obviously, that she's going to be a stripper.
Oh.
And then just not at all.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, there's no drama. She doesn't need to be in the movie. Like, the only drama is later.
Is
and
later.
Not.
For the, yeah.
But, yeah, it was just one of those, like... It was just weird to set up that, like, hide my face.
Yeah.
Cut to the strip
it
club,
does not matter.
And then it's like, oh yeah, she's a stripper for the rival gang. That would be something, or a go-go place because Black Bikini Club it was called, which was weird because like,
well, but it's not. You don't even get to the stripping and the go-go thing doesn't happen yet. What you get immediately following that is Paul Sorvino.
Oh, that's right.
The mob boss starting his day by eating in same strip club. And apparently walking around without shoes, because there's a whole gag about, like,
yeah.
this guy, his little wormy guy having his flip-flops. So he's just walking around a strip club.
Get my shoes. No, I need wine. People in France, they put champagne and oranges. They call it a mimosa.
Yeah.
Like, this is a fucking weird scene.
Yeah, it's so weird. Because, again, it started to sort of dawn on me, like, this has no budget. This is... They're just going to reuse this same scene later, because why would this guy be having his breakfast in the strip club if he's supposed to be some powerful, you know what I, like it just seemed so like I don't know, we got to shoot it here.
It didn't occur to me, but you're absolutely right. I was just thinking he owns the place and he's like decadent, but no, you're absolutely right. That's
yeah, like
what
why would
is.
He be yeah
you're but absolutely, you're 100% right. They had that location
and just I don't know what that scene was supposed to do other than you see this character and he's a jerk to everyone.
Yeah, but for the choice for it to be a go-go bar, not a strip club, is weird to me.
I don't know Canadian strip laws.
Well, so this is, well, it's, keep in mind, this isn't Canadian. This is in New York, New Jersey.
Oh, right,
now, there is a thing in New York, New Jersey, where in New Jersey, if you serve alcohol, you cannot be nude on stage.
Oh, sure. Omaha had that.
Yeah, all actual strip clubs had to be dry.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you could bring your own. I don't know. I never went to strip clubs back then, but I knew this was a rule. But it's weird that a Canadian guy would utilize that in a movie, or did he just not want to show tits?
I think
it was just,
yeah, I don't think any thought was put into it. I think it's just like, let's just get whoever we can get, and if they want to take their tops off, fine. If not, fine. Maybe it's like, no, we need to keep this PG-13 because I want to get it on TV. I don't know what the thought was behind it.
Oh, okay, so wait, I skipped a couple of very important things here. One, opening dialogue or opening monologue, he talks about how family is the most important thing in life.
Oh boy.
So is he part of the Fast and the Furious?
Yeah. No, like,
because it's the same speech Dom gives in every Fast and the Furious movie.
And it would be great if that speech had anything to do with the rest of the movie. But
well, there is a family in the rest of the movie.
That's true.
And he does live a life for a while. That's... So it's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I missed that. And then the abysmal logo for this movie. People, if for some reason you haven't seen this movie, you're listening to this. Well, why? One, but two, just look up the logo for this. It's like three legs and like a...
Now that's supposed to be like some kind of occult symbol, I thought. Because I've seen something like that before, but it's like, it's not human legs. It's like horse legs or something.
I have seen it before. I thought they were trying to play off the Silence of the Lambs moth head, death moth head, uh-huh. like the way they kind of did the brown with his face in the middle, right, or somebody's face in the middle. Yeah, that is a familiar symbol to me. I didn't look into it because I just it was embarrassingly terrible.
It's really great.
And then the third thing that I skipped over that needs to be brought up. So he wakes up in the morning, his wife is next to him sleeping.
Uh-huh.
There's a glass of scotch with ice cubes
in it.
And they took the time to pick up the sound of the ice cubes jingling in the glass. Uh-huh. Like, they did, like, Foley for it. Or, you know, they just had a good mic. Yes. But that's continuity on the highest level. But that's the moment where I went, I think I'm starting to get a feel for the movie uh-huh. I'm about to watch.
Yeah.
And then we stop seeing faces. So that's
basically. Yeah.
And that's when we get to meet his friends, his capos,
gang. Who are driving to go pick him up.
Again, beautiful singing voices.
Yeah, listening to the song, Just a Gigolo, that later when they perform in the club, you realize that's him singing. So his friends are driving around listening to him singing in a car.
Okay, that's something I want to bring up. Are we to understand later that when he's singing in the club with the singing I'm Just a Gigolo.
Yes.
Or we'd understand that when they were driving, they were actually listening to a recording of known gangster that runs all of Manhattan, uh-huh. according to the other gang, that there's a recording out there that is put down and recorded very well in a studio that their friends are listening to while going to pick him up.
Absolutely not, no. Because that would require any kind of tracking from scene to scene. And that this movie just went like, I could put that song here. Let's do that. Later he went like, oh, you know, it would be fun. Let's do that song over here. So it's just a goofy coincidence that they're listening to it. But I don't think the idea is that you're supposed to be, that they're like,
okay,
let's put on Boss's Greatest Hits.
You know, all I have to say to that is, boozy, boozy, bop, bop. Oh, God, I really, really hate David Lee Roth.
And this movie just keeps them making you think of him. It's great.
Well, just because of that song. So they're driving and just they're awful, awful people. And they're making fun of Weasley guy in the backseat.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. And then it gets worse because mm-hmm. they roll up to the house and Frank D'Angelo starts yelling at them.
Yeah. Cause he's got a gun because when loud music starts playing, you get a gun.
Yeah. He's bringing, he's waving a gun around.
You come to my home, you're playing this loud music. And then like threatens them. And wants the Weasley guy to get in the trunk. In a not like fun joking around way, but in a seriously threatening way, but then he's like, busting your balls over here. Come get the gabagoosh or whatever.
Yeah. So it's not endearing.
No one is. Yeah.
It's awful. And they go to their cabin. And their cabin is like a house in the suburbs.
Yeah, it's very nice.
But it's not cabin-y at all. Like, I mean, it looks like it's just on
the outskirts of town.
On Long Island somewhere.
Yeah.
And they show up. And they want to just play cards.
No, they don't. He does. Yeah. They're unpacking. He's like, what are we going to do? Are we going to play cards? Why aren't we playing cards? And they're like, oh, okay, boss.
That is, it seems like the least amount of fun I could ever imagine.
No, just getting yelled at by
friend. Just the joyless sitting at a table playing cards with your friends. There's no music on. There's no fun. No. They're not having chips. They're going, we are playing cards.
Yeah.
Cards are the reason we're here. It is the most kind of type A, like, I have a list of the vacation things, mm-hmm. and all the vacation things will be fun if we do the list in order.
Well, that is the first round of we're all going to tell horrible jokes.
Ooh,
and pad out this movie with these horrible jokes.
I know, that is correct. But that is also the first time we hear one of the jokes, because a joke is told in its totality twice in this movie.
Yeah, and you think the second time, like okay, something's going to come of this, because, you know, you've set it up before. No, you get the same joke again, just in case you didn't like it enough the first time.
Oh, fucking A. So that is, and then, okay, so does anything happen? They just play cards?
They just play cards, and you get Eric Roberts watching him, so you're like, this is going to lead to something. And then what I love is they just apparently have fallen asleep playing cards because they're just sleeping in the chair
which
they were just sitting at. Like, they all just like got gassed at once. Like they're in the prisoner village.
Yeah. Is that where that weird white ball was bouncing?
Yeah,
behind
that's why. Yeah.
I just couldn't help but think how uncomfortable their necks would be the next day.
But it's just like, how did you all fall asleep? That's when I'm like, this movie is fantastic, because that's No thought went into that. No, we just all fall asleep at the table, like,
and
at once.
Armand Asante's head position is so obviously not asleep. Like, the other ones, you could maybe see that. But, like, his head's, like, he's got his arms straight out. And it looks like his head's resting on his bicep. But it's not, obviously. Like, it's the taking no weights. Yeah. So it just seems like he's holding his head up.
He didn't
want
to get the makeup on his sleeve.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's holding his head up, waiting for the cue to, in quote, wake up. And him waking up, Frank D'Angelo, I mean, waking up, is like a Laurel and Hardy thing where he wakes up, he's the full yawn, does the belly scratch wake up. I mean, it is a 1930s serial level of waking up. This is the stuff in the movie that I kind of love.
It's so all that awkward and inept, and it's magical.
Here's the thing. I don't know if I want to call this inept, only because I've seen a Neil Breen movie.
Yeah.
Neil Breen is inept.
Yeah.
This is competent filmmaking. It's just really bad competent filmmaking.
Well, see, okay, so that's the difference is that Frank D'Angelo has clearly surrounded himself with people that know what they're doing, whereas Neil Breen still has not.
I think you're right.
But, like, all the sort of the creative, the script part of it, the act part of it is really just not a lot, continuity, not a lot of thought put into there. While they were sleeping, we get another scene of the strip club.
The Black Bikini Club.
Yeah, the Black Bikini Club, which is just wholly ridiculous in all kinds of ways.
Well, the fact that the median age of the strippers is about 36.
Right. But it's
which,
also...
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you here. I'm not age shaming here. They're not like unattractive people. It's just, this is a big time mobster. You can afford better strippers. It's just, I know it's stupid. I shouldn't be picking out these little things, but it's just so like, there's no way to buy into this reality when every aspect of it is just low budget.
Well, and it's great because... So, yeah, you realize, like, this guy just ate dinner here. This guy just ate breakfast here. He's still sitting at the same table. The only difference is he's wearing a hat now.
Well, yeah, and that's his nighttime.
It's nighttime, yeah. And Daniel Baldwin is wandering around in front of the strippers. Like, everyone's facing the stripper. And then Daniel Baldwin's just, like being the floor boss, but just standing in front of the stripper walking around so he can be in the light and you can see that it's Daniel Baldwin.
Yeah.
It's great. And then there's this little subplot where... the Paul Sorvino's wife, I don't know, sees a stripper on the phone and goes over to yell at her. And I started wondering if like this movie was maybe crowdfunded and like that was a stretch goal. Like if you give $100, we will write a scene where you're going to yell at somebody.
Oh, you might be right.
That's what mafia movies are apparently, is you just yell at people.
Because I didn't mean anything in context of it because you don't know who that lady is.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And then she's yelling so she gets her a drink. The lady on the phone that got yelled at hands a drink to the maybe Paul Sorvino's wife.
Yeah.
And then she reaches under the counter and takes her own drink.
Yep.
You're at work, lady. I know you're working at a go-go club, but like, you know, how about you calm down on the hooch a little bit?
Yeah.
You
know? Maybe that was going to go to somewhere and they just decided they yes-anded away from it.
The third act actually is really deep, compelling scene of her trying to get off alcohol to go to the Betty Ford.
There's a better movie happening somewhere else in this world. Yeah, they just got all the cut scenes.
Yeah. They just forgot to follow that character.
Yeah.
The one with like her triumph over her demons and then finally confronted Danny and what he did to her back in high school.
Yeah. Getting her life back on track. But then, so we get one scene of Daniel Baldwin, being like, oh, that Traficani guy, I don't like him. And Paul Sorvino, in between bites of steak, is like, shut up.
Well, there's also, I think it's a scene, and if it's not, who cares, it's close enough, where they go, basically exposition, because how much of Manhattan does Traficanti own? Oh, he owns it all.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that was real subtle, boys.
Well, the strip club MC is also great, because he's just winging it, and he is just overflowing with no personality.
Is that a famous person?
Oh, sorry. He can't possibly be, other than maybe for sports.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No,
I think that's a famous person.
Sure.
Because that reeks of cameo.
But yeah, because he was just like, we have the most beautiful girls in the world from all over the world. New York, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And then like...
No, he goes, Brooklyn, Bronx.
Yeah, and it's not played...
Long Island.
It's not played for laughs. Like there's... They were just like, no, okay, just announce the dancers.
Look,
and that'll be a background thing.
John, I got to admit to you, I actually did find that a little funny. just because I said...
No, it's funny. I just don't think it was played. I don't think it was meant to be.
Oh, see, I thought they actually did that as like actually a funny joke.
That also included a pointless scene where there's a guy grabbing a stripper and the MC comes over to him and says, I'm like, hey, buddy, keep your thermostat at 32 degrees Fahrenheit, which was a great way of like, hey... What are you doing having a boner at this strip club? That is not what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't, I've rewound that because I couldn't tell what he said. And then I just had to stop and think about that line a bit.
Well, what I liked about that is they converted it from Celsius, which is what they use in Canada.
Yeah, so, that's because they didn't want the tell.
Yeah, so they knew, because this movie, in this movie, New York feels like its own character. You know, this is like a very, this is like a Woody Allen.
The city is the real Sicilian vampire.
Yeah, it really breathes. Oh, so let's okay. There's probably already been many moments of this, and this is a whole movie gripe. Were there subtitles for the huge amounts of Italian that were being spoken?
No. And like there's some bits where you're just like, oh, it's a little insult or something. But then like, no, there's huge swaths of dialogue where it's in Italian and you're like, should I be knowing what's going on?
Like there's some words that like okay, so the lady that you have sex with outside of your wife is like a gumad or something like that. But they kept saying like gumadi. Like they threw an I at the end, which I'm guessing is just like a plural form.
It was everyone was having sex with Paul Giamatti.
Oh, would have been a better
movie.
They
could not get him his likeness.
It was just one of these weird things. Like the few Italian words I know, you're saying strangely, and it just really threw.
I mean, he's legitimately Italian.
Yeah, that's fine. It's just I don't know Italian,
right?
And I bet most of the audience of this movie, that being us, don't know Italian.
Yeah.
And it was really awkward because full scenes of Italian being spoken,
of like him having a touching moment with his father on the phone.
Yes,
it's all in Italian, and you're like. Okay. Like you think like he's just saying something and you're like, oh, look at how he's so moved. He's speaking Italian, but then he just continues to speak Italian and they don't tell you anything about
it. It's very awkward. Also, and this is a little bit out of order, but it goes to the Italian thing. At one point, his uncle Sal, played by other famous Palumbo, I think his last name or something.
Yeah. The real acne scarred guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He tells a thing about toasting. Oh, we no longer toast with something. We now toast with... What the fuck did that mean?
Yeah, like that. Like you want to let me in on this at all? Like that would
be... It was like, everybody there, they're like all 96 years old. So now we say, ba-da-da-da. Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck is...
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I learned a little something. What the
fuck? Because also, the rest of the crew, other than and Frank D'Angelo, they show no signs of knowing Italian.
Nope.
No. Like, it's very Weasley guy does not.
I mean, Armand Asante clearly does.
Yeah, well, Weasley guy, he doesn't look like he speaks Italian at all.
No. So I don't know if you've noticed yet, audience, but we haven't. We've leaned on the Sicilian part of this, not so much the vampire, because the vampire part just barely is in this movie at all.
Oh, boy. Admission time.
Uh-huh.
When I was in high school, I owned a pair of dental acrylic fangs that I got made. They could snap in and be worn all day. I could eat with them. Mm-hmm. They were professionally made fangs. I spent a significant amount of money on it.
Not surprised.
I've read vast books on vampire lore. Like, I was a walking stereotype for a minute.
Sure.
Just want to point that out. Moving on from this forward, I'd speak as an expert.
Right.
And this movie is... I mean, I guess technically there were a couple of vampire notes in it. Mm-hmm. Like, but the way in which he turns into a vampire might be the dumbest thing I've ever seen in a movie ever. Not just in a vampire movie. Not in a gangster movie. In any movie ever, a plastic fruit bat that he picks up and gently puts on his neck and then thrashes around.
See, you call it dumb. I call it disrupting the vampire paradigm. He's an entrepreneur. He's innovating. He's coming up with whole new ways to become a vampire. Because sometimes it's another vampire gets you. Sometimes it's Michael Paré opens a crate or a cardboard box full of bananas that a vampire bat is just laid on top of. And you go, what's this? And then it flies. I guess I'll use that term.
Yeah.
To your neck,
yeah,
and then you start screaming. CG blood comes out, and everyone points a gun at your head.
So he gets bit by this vampire or this bat. It makes me think. Also, okay, if anything, when you're tallying the banana, you worry about tarantula, not fruit bat.
No, yeah,
he should have been turned into a tarantula.
Well, or just Harry Belafonte really dropped the ball there.
Oh, if he turned it. Oh, if they sang a Harry Belafonte song later in the movie, I would take back everything I said about this movie.
Yeah. So, but Harry Belafonte would have had to have sung a song written by Frank D'Angelo.
So Harry Belafonte presumably singing about the Caribbean, where daylight come, I want to go home. Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Yes.
Do you now understand why that song is entirely about something we never knew? Come, Mr. Tallyman, daylight come. And we want to go home.
Oh,
they're all vampires.
They're all vampires.
The Harry Belafonte song is teaching vampires how to live. It's like when you sing little songs to kids that teach them how to tie their shoes or something. Harry Belafonte is
get a job working in the Caribbean counting bananas.
Exactly. Because in bananas, you turn into vampires and you have to go home by daylight.
By daylight. Why do vampires need money?
We're through the looking glass here, people.
So, yeah. So he gets attacked by the vampire bat. And then, that's the trip's over. The cabin trip is over. It's been ruined. So they take him to a hospital. Immediately the doctor's like, yeah, you're fine. It's just a little scratch.
That doctor, by the way, some of the best acting I've ever seen in my life.
Fits the universe of this movie perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, boy. But what I love about that part is how nothing... I don't even know how to describe this. How nothing happens.
Yes.
And no one reacts to it. Like, okay, so it's... This traumatic thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
He's bleeding, arterial spray all over the place. And then there's no follow-up questions. There's no concern. It's just like this, not to go out of order, but it was like a mouse farting. It was just a nothing.
Yeah, well, but it's this answer to the question is, what if you were slowly becoming a vampire and you didn't really care? It affected your life not at all. Because so he gets home and Daryl Hannah is very upset that this has happened, and he's like, ah, don't worry about it, and he's like, I'm gonna go take a shower, clean this blood off me.
This is my favorite.
Takes off his big flannel shirt, takes that off, revealing his leather long sleeve shirt that he's been wearing, which I gotta get me one of those. And they're like, yeah, he's in the mirror, and he's like, wait a minute, I can't see myself in the mirror at all.
Yeah.
This seems weird.
You missed the most important part.
Oh, what's that?
He taps the mirror to make
sure it's
working.
Yeah, he taps the mirror to make sure it's the mirror. And then he's like, then he calls his wife up and is like, you got a little something on your face. And then she goes, looks in the mirror, and he's like, okay, no, it's still working.
Yeah.
Like, that was his solution to solve that.
Tapping the mirror, I don't know if I've ever laughed harder at a non-comedic moment of my life, because that was, he tapped the mirror to make sure it's still working. Because you know how sometimes all of the reflective falls to the bottom of your mirror?
Yeah.
And you just have to tap it to reactivate
it, to it goes to sleep.
That was fucking amazing. He tapped the mirror.
And then following that revelation, he looks at some photos of his family. Like, that's it. Like, it's not like, what's happening to me that I don't have a reflection? He's like, yeah... Mi familia.
All right. So at this point, the daughter says, hey, I want to go to a club tonight, mm-hmm. Uncle's club or something.
Yeah.
So it was some relative or something.
Yeah.
And the mom's like, no, you shouldn't go. The mom says to Frank D'Angelo, you know, back me up on this one. He's like, hey, Italian stuff. You shouldn't go. And she says, yeah, okay, I won't go. And then she goes anyway.
Yeah. Teens.
Did you notice the song that was playing at the club?
No.
The song was them repeatedly singing, I Want to Live Forever.
Oh, yeah.
John, it's a
subtle.
Vampire movie.
Yeah. Yeah, subtle. Which also, the club is the strip club. And
I was curious. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I was thinking about this, and this was something that was driving me nuts during the strip club scene, is it's like, okay, obviously, you have no money. You're making this thing. But you made that strip club look like you have no money. The way they shoot the club, it's all like tight, so it makes it seem like the crowd is a lot bigger than it is.
Yeah.
It makes it seem like more impressive than it actually is. Whereas the strip club was just like, hey, we put up some of them shiny curtains. Look at how sexy this is.
The dancing in that scene, also much better than stripper dancing.
Yeah, yeah. But so that's when he's looking at the photos and thinking about Mia Familia, and he vamps out.
Well, what he does is he can imagine his daughter being hit on at the club in an aggressive way, and his fingernails grow.
Yes,
and he gets British teeth.
Yes,
and that's red eyes.
Yeah, he doesn't even get fangs. He just gets like his teeth just get fucked up.
Yeah, he's just got like snaggly British teeth.
Yeah, and then
in your face, Eden.
Yeah, then he's mad, and fortunately, apparently, he lives right by the strip club. Because he's there immediately, and beats up her offenders. Doesn't like bite them or anything like that. He just punches them, gets her out of there, and she's like, "How'd you know I was here?" And he goes, "Baby, I can hear a mouse fart."
That's not an answer.
No, it's not. No.
Like, that's, why does no one follow up? Because, what? Okay, one.
Because they're done with that scene.
Lady, the daughter dancing in the club. I get that guy touching her butt was inappropriate.
Yeah.
Not saying that's you know, no consent. Consent is sexy, et cetera, et cetera. But she kind of said, like, hey, you know, like, stop that. Or at least made it clear that she didn't want to dance with them. And it sort of ended. Like, yeah, they're still kind of creeping near her. But it wasn't like a, let's beat the shit out of you. And I'm not saying, like, this is appropriate behavior for real life. But since we're watching a movie, maybe grab a tit. Like, just do something that would make it you should get beat up for. But this is just, like, kind of horny teen guys dancing and acting inappropriately. But not supernatural strength getting the shit kicked out of you inappropriate acting. Yeah. It's like...
I also like that her first response is, do you know my last name is Trafficante?
Yeah.
Like, I just liked that that was the only response to that.
Yeah, and then he said, hey, you know what my last name is? Trafficante. Because he can beat the shit out of random guys. I do have to say, impressed with Frank D'Angelo's stunt punching.
Sure, yeah.
Looked good. I realized that I've seen Frank D'Angelo before. This was Member of Revelation. I watched a series of videos because of you of the most mismatched fights ever. And I went on this whole thing of watching weird fight videos because you had sent me something.
Uh-huh.
And then in the corner, I was watching these dumb things. One of those fights was the time that Frank D'Angelo paid to fight an MMA fighter in the ring.
Oh,
they said Canadian millionaire fights an MMA fighter. I had seen that clip before. So I went back and I was watching Frank D'Angelo things on YouTube after this. I went, oh, fuck, I know this. I've seen this guy before. I've seen this embarrassment before. But anyway, so he's trained in punching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
And he does some pretty good...
He watched that Baz Rutten video. He knows what's up.
Yeah. He does some pretty good fight work. And yeah, and then he leaves and he says, hey, I can hear a mouse fart. Oh! And that doesn't answer anything.
No, and then later, then they go home. And then later, he hears a mouse fart.
Yeah.
Because he can.
Also, what kind of fucking scumbag house are you living in?
Yeah.
Like, you run all of Manhattan as a gangster. How the fuck have you got fucking mice in your house?
Hey, they're tenacious.
Live like animals. No, yeah. But I mean, he's, hey, I'm Sal Trafficante. For fucking 5 minutes. And what that's supposed to be. I should really call it exterminator. This house is quite filthy.
Yeah.
No one will know what I'm saying because not many people speak Italian that are watching this.
As a vampire, he can't, apparently. Like, that's one of the many powers a vampire doesn't have, is the ability to call.
So he saves his daughter from the club. Oh, by the way, I made a note that they referred to that as Chekhov's mouse fart.
Happened. Like they said, like the fact that they went through with that is exactly funny businessman thing. Like, he can. Look at that. That's great.
Then we get to, we're getting to a very confusing part. They want to go to church, and for some reason the wife doesn't want to go to Sal's restaurant to eat there anymore.
Yeah, she's just tired of the same old, same old.
And that goes nowhere.
It doesn't matter.
So let's forget about that.
Yeah.
They go to church and they're running late, and he parks up front to let them out, and he steps out onto the asphalt, and his foot starts smoking.
Yeah.
And he goes, hey, you know, I gotta go get a yabagool. I gotta go in. I'll get you back on spin around. I'll pick you up later. We'll do good. We'll get eat. Hey, watch a bunch.
Yeah.
My Italian accent is spot the fuck
it's
on.
Great.
And they're like, okay, this isn't weird at all. We'll go to church now. And they go. And the next scene, he's in a cemetery dropping off flowers at his parents' grave.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we already did this, but out of order. But the scene where out of nowhere he goes, I can't believe my parents are dead.
Yeah, they're driving to church. And he's like, man, I can't believe my parents are gone. Like, it didn't just happen.
Yeah, like, or did it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Established. But okay, so he's dropping off flowers at the grave.
Yeah, because they needed motivation to visit his parents' grave.
Well, okay, but... last I checked, that's consecrated ground.
Yeah.
At, like, the church.
Yeah.
The next thing after his foot catches fire is he goes, oh, I can't be at church. I'll catch fire. You know what I should do is go to holy ground where my dad's buried.
Yeah.
And then it's fine.
It's not the same. It's different. It's like some cemeteries Highlanders can be in. It's very similar.
Yeah, so anyway, he's okay, so Holy Grail, that's fine. Because I'm going to tell you, John, don't make me bring up how I used to have a congenital acrylic
teeth.
I know these rules.
I don't think anyone wants to know anymore about that.
Oh, really? No. Oh, okay, well, fine. I won't tell you about the velvet shirt I owned. So now we're at Uncle Sal's, and they're like, hey, I have some Gabrigol!
Yeah, so it's a great place where there's no chairs. Like, everyone is standing and eating their food.
And this is where... He's been in a shitload of stuff. Like, he was in, I think he was in...
The Goonies.
Yes, The Goonies is what I was thinking of. Yes, his name is Robert Davi, which is, I never would have come up with that name. But so, this is where he does the toast speech about how...
When you toast, you don't say...
This anymore.
You don't say, gooshagosh, you say, gibbidoo.
Yeah, and they all laugh. Now, here's a fun little thing. They toast shortly thereafter and say salute.
Yeah, it doesn't.
No, John, they say salute.
Are you starting to pick up that
John,
none of the
John,
nothing
they say
tracks?
Salute.
Yeah, nothing tracks in this movie.
They went through, but it's the same fucking. It's like the same scene.
Yeah.
How do you? You
it does
do,
not matter. It's so great. It does not matter at all. It just takes any of that, and just it's only concerned with what it's concerned about in that exact moment. Paul Sorvino shows up. Frank D'Angelo starts losing his shit. He's like, you disrespect me in my own house?
Well, what he
does... It's not your house. This is a restaurant.
Well, what he does is shows up and says hello to everybody at the table but Frank D'Angelo. But I think he's saying it's his house because that's his uncle's restaurant.
Right, but it's
so,
just...
Yeah, no, I got you. Yeah. It's like it's a restaurant and stops it. But also, calm the fuck down, dude. How the hell did you end up running this entire
syndicate? He just likes to yell. He is a high-strung man.
And he likes to yell in Italian because most of that scene... was done in Italian.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know Italian. I don't know if we brought this up yet. I don't know Italian.
Yeah.
That happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to eating because, boy, this movie eats a lot.
This movie, there's a lot of food. That's important to Italian families. And this movie's all about family, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, so they're eating and Paul Sorvino is in the corner making Le Epic Troll Face because he's like, see what I did? I made him mad. Now he's all spun out. Woo!
Oh, yeah, he's talking to Daniel Baldwin. Yeah. And Daniel Baldwin's like, oh, let me kill him. Take these handcuffs off of me.
Yeah.
And it's an acting performance that would be bad in another movie. But in this one, it's like, you're too good at acting to be here. Like, it's just like, because even him poorly acting is better than a lot of, and it's not even like the actors are doing a bad job. It's just the script isn't there. So
yeah,
it's just
they're
awkward,
just winging it.
Yeah, sorry. It's repeating myself, but it's just, it's I'm constantly reminded of this stuff.
Then, so he, with his new vampire hearing, can hear it. And so you're like, oh, no, that's going to go down. But then he gets a phone call from a very raspy-voiced Robert Loggia. He's like, oh, bugaboo. And he's like, who is this? Like, it's happened before. But this is the first anyone else knows about it. And then he's like, I'm your dad. And he immediately is like, obviously you are my dad. And then they have this big conversation in Italian, and everyone's just kind of staring at him. Then they're done. They're done with that scene.
The whole thing about the dad. And we also, that was the scene where they retell what's his name's joke.
The fucking nuts.
But we might have skipped this, but there was an important scene because this is the only part where vampirism plays really any part, is that he has a dream that he bites his family.
Yes.
And that's it. So now you just know that he's worried about that because there's one scene of it.
Well, and allegedly that worry leads him to contact James Caan.
Yes.
Because he just goes to this building.
The sorbet of this movie's shit salad.
So he just goes to this building and goes up to see, it's his protractor thing.
No, he shows up with his capos and then says, oh no, wait a second. I have something to do.
Yeah.
What were they in that building for then?
I don't know.
Because it's played as if, oh, I have this idea. Now I got to go see this thing. But they were going to do something in that building, and they said, oh, no, wait a second. I'll be back in half an hour. Why don't you guys get something to eat? No, we don't want to eat. Why would we eat without you? Well, I don't know. I should come back in half an hour. Okay.
we have you for the day, so you better be in this scene.
I mean, that's exactly it. It's like, famous people need to be there.
Yeah, we got them. Let's use them.
I love Frankie Angel's face with the James Caan stuff, because you can see he's like, I'm talking to fucking James Caan. This is the shit.
Well, what I also like is that he goes up to visit him, and then it's like, so who are you? Guy that I made the appointment with?
Oh, yeah.
Like, because everything is so just, we need to set this up.
So what he says is, hey, Doc, you got any exposition? that you could, you know, maybe give me some a little exposition. And it's like, ah, I gotta go, bada boom, bada bing. Ah, you grab him right in the hooda, and
And so he
Italian.
he's like, no, I do folklore stuff. And he's like, well, I'm a vampire. And James Caan goes, yeah, probably.
He describes how the bat bite went away.
Uh-huh.
Then James Caan interrupts him and says, no. I just need to take some blood.
Yeah.
That's it. No, the only thing he described was the bat bite going away quickly shows him that the bat bite isn't there anymore. I'm pointing to my neck here, people.
Yes.
That's it. There's no vampire-like symptoms.
Sure, okay.
None of this happened. Now, John, let me go back to how I'm a vampire expert. Uh-huh. If you said, hey, I got bit by a bat and then my neck healed quickly, my first thought isn't vampire. My first thought is probably, it's probably like a, skin capillary,
Right,
it's
not that bad of a bite.
Yeah, it's not a thing. I just need to, because this movie doesn't make sense. They don't connect any dots.
Yeah.
So no, do not give this movie credit by inventing the story. Don't mansplain to me.
Well, but I'm just saying focusing on this tiny stuff at a certain point is self-defeating because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I think it's funny. So.
It doesn't matter. No, fair enough. because case in point, so he's got this neck thing, and then James Caan, being the expert in folklore, is like, oh, well, I'm also a physician. And I have a nurse ready to go with some blood stuff. Yeah, and they take his blood. They take a lot of blood. And James Caan, to get the blood before he does, James Caan just does, you got to get that vein up. So, you slap the arm.
Yeah.
James Caan just does this like he's clearing a place to sit. He's just like,
The other part of it was James Caan describing what a doctor is. He goes, so Frank Daniels goes, what kind of doctor? He's like, oh,
Medical,
like in stethoscope. If you want prescriptions, I can give you prescriptions.
Yeah.
Improv
is hard. Like, they gave him nothing.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what's going on.
At this point, in quotes, I put, poor James Caan.
Yeah.
Which is the second time I wrote that.
Well, what's great is that goes away. They're done with that scene.
They go back to Sal's restaurant.
Yeah. And,
which they're fucking closed, according to the sign.
Yeah. It was back. And then, James Caan, shows right back up. And he's like, well, that was quick. And James Caan like, yes, but this is very important. You're a vampire.
It's so nonchalant.
And hey, this is I've seen 1,000 cases of these. it does not matter. But then this is the best part of the movie. It's when he's like, so I was hoping maybe, I could just give me a little nibble. Because, first of all, he already has a vampire blood. He could just drink the vampire blood if you want to be a jerk about it. Turn into a vampire that way.
Well, John, don't be... No.
but just like that. So that scene happens a couple of times where, then later James Caan calls him, on the phone. He's, sitting outside his house. He's like, yeah, so maybe a little nibble, a little nosh. Yeah. And I like that is a great storyline, is the guy that wants to be a vampire.
I want more of that.
Yeah. And James Caan, he does it because he's playing it straight as hell.
Yeah.
He's not being wacky about it, but in doing that, it's hilarious.
I wish more of the movie was that.
Yeah, but they only had him for whatever day that they had him for.
Yeah.
But this whole movie has that kind of thing where it's like, oh, this needless exposition about why you're back here. Rather than have scenes actually fit together, we're just going to say stuff.
And here's one of the extra scenes that I'm really glad was in the movie is Daniel Baldwin brings some lady into the bathroom and has sex with her.
Yes.
That was a scene I really needed. I'm glad that happened.
Yeah.
I'm glad I watched it and it's in my head now.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was gross.
But you know what? That might actually be the only scene in the movie where a thing happens and then later pays off.
Does it?
Because, because that's when they clears the Goomerinis, the Paul Giamatti's out of the club. Because he realizes that was the one she had sex with his enemy. He could just smell that on her.
Yes, but he also knew because he overheard Weasley guy that he needs to be alone in the club so they could try to kill him. Remember Weasley guy was...
But the Giamatti thing happened first.
It, in the end, it didn't need to because he already knew.
But that doesn't matter. Gotcha. I'm just saying this tracks.
Understood. Daniel Baldwin, he does some humping. I think is this where the big singing number comes
in? Yeah, because they go to
we've already referenced it, but we skipped over that he has overheard Weasley guy.
Well, this is, well, no, this is in the club when they're doing that, because they're, oh no, because we got at that. Sal's. Yeah, yeah, just like walks 5 feet away from his friends because he gets a phone call and is like, yes, I would love to betray my friends. Thank you. When can we kill my friends?
Yeah.
That my friends are sitting right there.
Oh, Santo? Yeah, he's right over there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can keep him alone. Yeah, you keep him alone in the club so you can shoot him in the head. Oh no, I'm just checking my messages.
Yeah.
that's my password.
Yeah, Armando Sante doing some great like incredulous face acting in that scene.
He's got a very Paulie Walnuts feel about him
in
this movie.
Very much. Yeah.
Now it's established that Weasley guy that they've treated like an asshole turns out to be a Weasley asshole.
Yeah.
After I picked my jaw from the floor, they're all at the club. And Frank D'Angelo, he's feeling a little blue.
Yeah, he's bummed out because he's a vampire and this is bad?
I thought he was bummed out because Weasley guy turns out to be Weasley.
Sure. Why not? Why not that one? Why not that be the reason? Because that makes more sense than being a vampire has little to do with this guy's life.
Well, so far nothing bad has happened because of him being a vampire other than he had one bad dream.
Yeah.
And in fact,
hearing mouse farts, probably you don't really want that.
That's true. But also he did get to defend his daughter's honor.
Yeah.
So like really,
and who doesn't love that?
So far, he's kind of at 50-50. It's like a wash. So dream about killing your family, but in real life, saving your daughter. So far, not so bad with the whole vampire thing. Also, found out you can go outside during the day. There's just very specific buildings you have to stay away from.
Yeah.
Which, also, how did they not do a scene where he's wearing a crucifix and it burns him? I mean, they're setting him up as being a Catholic.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I know it why. Seems like he's competent filmmaking.
It seems like he's less of a vampire and more Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver. He has weird fantasies about murder and saving helpless young girls.
Yeah. They're at the club and their buddy's like, you know, we need to cheer you up. Come on, we got to do this. We got to go on stage. And it's like going to lead to this big, you know, karaoke on stage thing. Now, not knowing anything about Frank D'Angelo, I was expecting one of two things. Is that he's kind of a terrible singer and everybody pretends to like it as like kind of, you know, the Naked King kind of Emperor's New Clothes deal. It's an obvious fake singing track, like when Zach Morris sang on Saved by the Bell, where it's like, no, that's like a 30-year-old baritone singing.
Yeah.
But it turns out it actually is him, and the man has a good voice, which is annoying,
actually. That's why he has 90 music credits in the...
Yeah, and so he's like, I can't. Well, anyway, apparently this band knows exactly what they're doing. They know this song. They've got it well-practiced, and he sings. He's like, this is... great, I'm cheered up. Sit back down. Now that I'm all cheered up, everybody get the fuck out of the restaurant.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wait, no, this is where the Goonie that had sex with Daniel Baldwin comes over.
And he's like, you disrespect me? See, you could have had a movie where these morally, usually pretty terrible characters, but perhaps maybe morally gray characters, like, has to come to turn with you know, a sort of a spiritual evil, vampirism. No, he actually, I'm a vampire. Well, now it's time to be a great dad and husband.
Yeah.
Like, something about that just makes him, he doesn't really have, a crisis of faith, but more he's just like, well, since I'm a vampire, I better stay true to my wife.
Yeah. No, this is very much like when Dominic Toretto meets the cop in Fast and Furious 1, where he's like, family. This is family.
Yeah.
Like, it brought them together even more.
Yeah, inexplicably, though.
So he has to talk to, so he's got to talk to his Gumad, and he talks to her and he's like, here, have some money. Because we can't be together, you know, cause now I realize that I love my wife.
Yeah.
She's like, I love you. And he's like, no, don't say that. And go away. And she's like, all right, well, that narrative thread's over, and she leaves.
Yeah. But he gets one more chance to yell at someone. So that's always good.
It's true. So she leaves and he makes his friends leave. And then here comes
Daniel Baldwin and a ton of people.
They walk in and they shoot him in the head, and he gets better.
Yeah.
And he walks outside, and the rival gangster had called his friends and said, hey, he's dead. You work for me now, because that's the way it works.
That's absolutely the way it works.
So he leaves.
I have watched 1.5 seasons of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
That is absolutely how it works.
He leaves the club. He sees his compatriots in mobsterdom, and they're like, hey, I thought you're dead. Nope. No explanation.
Yeah, it's fine.
No, we're good. So you guys got to leave? And they're like, why? He's like, you know, reasons. And then also, fair enough, because he's being honest, because this doesn't make any fucking sense. And then he goes on his killing rampage.
Yeah.
So the first one he does, he rips out Alec Baldwin's heart.
Yeah.
And shows it to him and goes, I didn't know you had one of these. Yeah. Oh!
Like, imagine, okay, so basically just imagine if John Wick was just him going like, they killed my dog, I gotta get back. And it's just a shot of him shooting the guy that shot his dog.
Yep.
Like, that's basically what happens here. There's not like a buildup, it's just a montage of him murdering people.
Yeah, so right before, so then he walks outside after one of these two murders. Eric Roberts and that other guy. It's like, we're going to arrest you now? Because I don't know why, but okay. He says, basically, you got two choices. You can try to arrest me now, and I kill you, and your career's over. Choice number two, you go home, you have some hot cocoa. And Eric Roberts goes, I like hot cocoa, and they just leave.
And they just go.
Because one,
wrapped up.
We don't know why they're trying to arrest him. And two, why... There's no evidence of him being a badass. Yeah. I mean, we've seen evidence, but Eric Roberts hasn't. There's no...
They saw everything at that cabin. They saw cards being played, which only mobsters do. But again, give this movie credit that they wrapped something up. At this point, it's just like, you did it. Yay.
You're 100% right.
That there's some sort of narrative closure.
Then finally, the final boss battle. He runs into his Weasley-ass friend.
Yes.
John, would you like to describe to the audience what he does to his Weasley-ass friend?
He yells at him, as is often he's meant to do, and then pulls off his testicles.
Yes.
And then presents them. Yes. And they're bloodless. Looks like a sack, and then there's two white things in the middle. I mean, you know, medically speaking, there's two white balls in the middle. And then he jams it in the guy's mouth.
Yeah, he ripped off his balls and made him eat it.
Yeah,
so that's the thing.
And this is all like one shot.
Yeah,
all these when I talk about this montage thing, it is because with the exception of the Paul Sorvino thing, it's all just like a very tight shot of two people standing very close together, and then Frank D'Angelo is yelling at someone, and then like here's your heart that I'm just awkwardly bringing up into frame, or here's your balls,
Kalima.
Yeah, Kalima, but with balls.
Yeah. It was one of those things that when he ripped the arm off, I was like, I can't believe that just happened in this movie. Because it's this movie.
Yes.
And then the balls thing of like, I can't fucking believe that just happened in this movie.
So as freewheeling as this thing is in terms of like scenes just happening, did you always know like, okay, look, I know balls have got to be in this movie.
No.
Like I need to go to my prop guy with some significant time in advance, or just like, look, I need balls in 30 minutes.
No. Did they set this up earlier? Like the mouse fart, I was curious. At one point, did he say, Weasley guy, you've got no balls?
Probably. Who knows?
I just hope he did. And I'm not going to rewatch this movie ever again to try to find out. Like ever again am I going to rewatch this movie. But I hope it is, just to complete that narrative thread. We also skipped over. He talked to the guy from the Goonies and said, take care of my family if I have to leave. And he goes, they're my family too. Oh, which I think is like literally true because that's his uncle.
Yeah, it's his uncle.
Yeah, so it's not, okay. And he's like, oh, thanks. Really appreciate that. Okay. And then he goes to the graveyard.
Yeah.
Where he meets up with his dad.
Yeah, Robert Loggia is there, puts his arm on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And this is the scene you saw at the beginning of the movie.
Yes, this is they go back to the opening monologue.
Yeah. Of time being a flat circle
and
all that.
And he goes, the most important thing is family. And then, you know, that's it. And then does he turn to dust or is there just dust on that pillar?
I think the idea is that he's killed himself, that he's...
How?
By being outside when the sun was out.
But he's been in the sun multiple times.
He was outside when the sun was out.
Also, why?
Family is important.
But at no point did he actually really pose any threat to it. And also, while he was murdering people, did he have a snack?
He had one thought of eating his family once.
Yeah.
And that's one thought too many. So time for the old grave dust.
Because, I mean, he could have just eaten like Paul Sorvino or like many other people. And he didn't even think about it.
Nope.
So like you would think during
your sin.
Blood rage... You would go, I'm feeling a little bit peckish.
Yeah.
But no, he just...
That would be...
Because it's that he dies, I guess?
A Sicilian almost vampire.
Yeah, I don't want the end to read as he dies, because it also doesn't make any sense that this is a monologue.
Mm-hmm. But guess what? He's dead. Met up with his dad because family's important.
Yeah.
And maybe when something he said in Italian had something to do with any of this. I don't know.
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. Maybe some of that Italian stuff actually meant something.
It was like, oh, you were my... Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, it was like, hey, in the end, I'll come back to you. And we can all... We can hold the light together. We have a little manja. Yeah. Hey, your mom's going to be up there. She's making the meatball sauce you like so much. Because apparently your mom is a bag of shit and she doesn't show up to talk to you.
Yeah. Well, who cares? It's the dad. That's great.
Because, because Italian men, they never care
for
their mother.
They do not care for their mother.
Yeah, it's a well-known fact.
And so he's dead.
The end, and then 145
credits of Frank D'Angelo.
It is The Room-esque where I want people to watch this.
Yeah, absolutely, and I want watch this movie, please.
I want them to talk to me about it, but I never want to see this movie again.
Yeah, because like even going through the plot and like going through the stupid stuff, it doesn't like it's not the same thing as witnessing it.
Yeah,
because it doesn't make sense. It's
And we
things
skip
just happen.
So many dumb things. And it's just because it's just every, like, literally any scene that happened, we could have broken down the numerous dumb shit. There's nothing is consistent in this film. Also,
it's so great.
The audio in it is so poorly recorded.
It's very bad. Yeah.
I had a hard, because multiple times I thought people were speaking Italian. And then had to rewind and went, oh, no, that's English. I just couldn't hear
it. Yeah, them. It's just they're not mic'd at all.
I think they just had, like, one room mic.
Yeah, they just
guess.
Had, like, a boom, and that's it.
Yeah.
But it's great. There's something about this, like, it is so singularly terrible. And I always say, like, a bad movie that isn't self-aware is always better than a bad movie that is. Because then it's, you know, you're just hedging your bets and whatever. And the closest that came is the mouse fart. But I think even the mouse fart was genuine. Like, no, but this is a funny bit. Because it's this man is a mercurial psychopath, and it's just whatever is in his mind at this moment, that's what we're going to be filming right now. And it's amazing. It's a singular vision. I can't stress that enough. And it's like, I feel like I know him now after watching this. I feel like I have a little insight into Frank D'Angelo. Whether or not I want that, I don't know, but I feel like I got it.
Now, here's the question to you, John.
Yes.
As is your name. Would you watch another?
Absolutely.
You would.
Yep. Without a doubt.
Because I've been going back and forth, because apparently he did a straight gangster movie.
Yes.
I've been going back and forth in my head whether I want to do that.
The difference is I will not watch it by myself. I will force other people down this.
This is what I'm thinking. I think you and I, maybe some other people, should get together.
Yeah.
And watch this, and not for the show or anything. No, just feel the pain together.
Yeah. Like The Big Fat Stone or like No Deposit. There's another one that's like
Red Leaf.
Red Leaf, yeah. Something like
Red Maple Leaf.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Canada.
That's God certainly shed his grace on thee.
Yeah.
All right, John.
Yes.
Because I forgot the name of it, why don't you tell the people what we're watching for next time?
Well, hot on the heels of World Cup fever, we are going to do the soccer classic, I'm sorry, football classic, starring Pele and Sylvester Stallone, Escape to Victory.
Yes.
Escape to Victory.
Starring,
it's going to be great.
Starring Sylvester Stallone
and
Pele.
Pele.
Now, how did they book a Hawaiian volcano goddess to star against Sylvester Stallone?
I don't know. Hopefully they'll answer it in the movie.
Also, if Pele is a male god, my apologies, please don't kill me.
Are you apologizing to Pele or to his vicious followers?
No, to Pele.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I got an island. What, are they going to swim over here and punch me?
Fair enough.
Boats. Anyway, so we're watching that. Thank you. Leave reviews and stuff. Oh, hey, I heard this on another podcast, and do this. If you like this show, share the link to it on your Facebook or your Twitter and things. Like, hey, I like this show. You should listen to it.
Yeah.
That'd be very helpful to us because Twitter doesn't show links to people on any consistency, and that would be helpful. So do that. That'd be swell. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
don't be ashamed that you like this.
Hey,
it's okay.
You can be a little ashamed. Just still share anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, bye.
Bye.
Shazalov.